case number 08-1225, North Carolina petitioner versus Environmental Protection Agency. Mr. Bernstein for petitioner, Mr. Rosen for respondent, Ms. Campbell for intervener.
Counsel petitioner. Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal. With me at council table today is Alan Jernin, who's the chief of the Natural Resources Division of the Attorney General's Office in North Carolina. Honors, this case is about whether sources in the northern part of Georgia should be controlled for nitrogen oxide or NOx pollution to address regional ozone problems. I have to address two issues on the merits today. First is that EPA has not followed its court's decision in Michigan. And secondly, EPA has completely discarded and contradicted its existing policy without explanation. Four times, Your Honors, four times in the history of this case.
Are you going to address standing?
Would you like, I'd be happy to address
standing. I would like you to address standing.
Sort of thought you might be going there, considering comments on the last case. With regard to standing, I'd like to start by saying North Carolina is entitled to special solicitude in this case.
What does that mean?
It means that the court...
I know where it comes from. What does it mean?
As a functional matter, I think that this court needs to give some deference to the state in its capacity.
It doesn't relieve us of any of the inquiries under Lujan, does it?
No, it's not. And we
what does it mean?
I think the court needs to take a very close look and a very caring look at the issue and the facts to determine whether there is standing.
Do you agree on the causation or disability point that if Georgia is and will be within the NOx call requirements that you would not have causation or addressability?
If the electric generating units in the state of Georgia can stay within the budget requirements under the NOx call, we don't believe there would be causation. We don't believe there would be redressability. I think it would be causation.
Okay. So what's your answer to their argument that anti-EPA's statements in its rulemaking that Georgia is and will be within?
First, with regard to the electric generating units and NOx SIP call limits, I think the record is clear that the electric generating units in Georgia will not be within those limits. It doesn't matter whose data you look at. In this case, you can look at our data that we've submitted.
Will not be when? From 2011, they're clearly then.
I would have to disagree, Your Honor. With regard to the data each and every year from 2005 to the projections of 2011, and we have to remember that the state of Georgia's projections for 2011 and 2009 and 2010 include are equivalent to most the lowest amount of emissions from that state ever on record from the electric generating units.
You refer to EPA's repeated findings as notes to the docket. And I know what that means as a matter of law, but clearly the notes say, based on consideration of the record before us, we make this finding regarding the northern two-thirds of Georgia. So your burden, it seems to me, has to be to show that in some way the agency has made a mistake in that finding. Would you agree with that?
We would not agree with that.
What is your burden?
Well, this case is not about whether the agency had jurisdiction over the issue. This case is about whether this court has Article III jurisdiction.
No, but when the court is faced with agency findings, then don't you, because you've already acknowledged to Judge Garland that Georgia is meeting CAP, then you cannot show redressability.
Correct.
So the agency has made these repeated findings.
Well, the agency has never made any findings with regard to whether these electric generating units would exceed the budget. We actually specifically noted in our comments they did not make such finding.
And what EPA, do you mean they did not make
The comments made by the Environmental Protection Agency were that there would be a specific level of reductions from a specific scope of sources.
Well, don't say, I just want to read from JA 18. After reviewing the available information, EPA finds ample evidence to note that beginning with 2007 ozone season, NOx emissions in northern Georgia will be less than assumed by the NOx call budget. Isn't that what we're talking about?
And the math they used to show that had to do with...
The math, but I just want to know that they've made the statement. They did make the statement.
They did make that statement, Your Honor.
Okay. And so it's in the form of, of a funding by the agency.
Correct.
All right.
So now you're going behind that.
We're going behind that, and part of the reason we're going behind that is well, that was not an issue before the agency. The agency specifically said in its proposal for withdrawal rule that we are not looking to that ground to make a determination in this case. The agency actually specifically said we don't want comment on that issue. And North Carolina offered some comments on that issue, but we did not offer elaborate comments on the issue because it simply was not something that the agency wanted addressed. Now it seems that the interveners want to rely exclusively on that ground to make their case with regard to standing. I would also...
I'm just trying to understand the principles the court has to apply where you have agency finding. Then your burden, it seems to me, is to show that there's something wrong with the funding. However you want to describe it, going behind finding or whatever. But they have made this finding. I mean, they repeatedly say this.
So to put a point on Judge Rogers' question, is the issue for us whether there's substantial evidence supporting it?
I think that this court can look at that issue de novo, quite honestly, because that is an issue, first of all, that was not for the CAPE, before the agency on the merits. It was a gratuitous finding that the agency made that specifically said was not at issue. And second, as I indicated, this is a question of whether this court has jurisdiction under Article 3.
Well, let's imagine that went through the district court for a moment, and the district court made this finding. And we only review it a clear error, notwithstanding that it's a jurisdictional, that it's a fact relevant to jurisdiction, we would still apply our normal clear error rule to district court's finding, right?
I think that would be the case. In that case, the standing issue clearly have been for the district court in that issue, because the district court has to be satisfied that it has Article 3 jurisdiction.
We would
the agency does not.
The standing issue itself, we would still decide de novo. We wouldn't defer to the district court's view on legal view on standing. I was talking about its view of fact finding. So if the agency had resolved a fact, which went to your standing, would we not review it for substantial evidence only?
Under the facts of this case, considering that the agency specifically said this is not an issue before the agency, I do not think it would be proper for this court to defer to the agency on the issue.
Okay, so what evidence are you pointing to contradict the evidence in their reply?
Well, we believe the best evidence of where electric generating units are complying with the budget is where the emissions from those units is below the budget number. Now, as I indicated, the emissions for each and every year from 2005 through 2011 show that these EDUs will emit above the annual allocation every single year. The only way, as both parties agree, the only way for those electric generating units to be below that amount is to use something called compliance supplement pool. Now, Mr. Kapp, the affiant for the state of Georgia, the affiant for the Georgia Environmental Protection Division, states simply as a bald allegation that, of course, Georgia would adopt the compliance supplement pool, and of course, it would distribute all these credits to the sources. Unfortunately for Ms. Kapp, he doesn't have the authority to make that statement. Georgia would be required to comply with the budgets if NOx SIP call were opposed. It is within Georgia's discretion to adopt the compliance supplement pool. It does have to adopt that compliance supplement
pool. If they
pool.
Did adopt those, then what happens to the redressability issue? I mean, if
even if now the first issue is Mr. Kapp works for the Georgia Environmental Protection Division. It's the Georgia Board of Natural Resources that has to write the rule to adopt the compliance supplement pool. Even if they do adopt the compliance supplement pool, it is still a rigorous process for sources to actually access the credits from that compliance supplement pool. Now, Mr. Kapp says, without any support whatsoever, of course they would access all of those sources. However, there's only two ways for sources to access those credits. The first is sources have to show that they had early reduction beyond other legal requirements. Now, there's a lot of talk about sources in this case making early reduction, but by and large, if not exclusively, what the sources are saying, what the parties are saying, is that those reductions were made pursuant to Clean Air Act requirements and pursuant to state implementation plan requirements. In fact, the Georgia Power's comment on page 189 of the Joint Appendix clearly state that their 4,000 tons of early reductions were made because they were required to make them under the state implementation plan. EPA's rules specifically state that reductions made to comply with the state implementation plan are not eligible for access to the plan supplement. So it is, the record is fairly clear that by and large, these early reductions would not be able to get access to the compliance.
But you agree, don't you, that if we were to conclude that Georgia's emissions levels would not change under the NOx SIP call because they could access credits, then you fail on redressability. I mean, if their conduct isn't going to change on NOx SIP call rule, then you lose on redressability. Isn't that right?
If this action would cause no change in behavior as far as the NOx emissions, it would not cause any change in North Carolina. I think there would be a standing problem at that point. The second method to access the compliance supplement pool is for a party to show that elect generating units show that complying with the budgets would cause undue risk, essentially to the electricity grid. And to do that, a party has to show not only an undue risk, but in addition has to show that it's unable to buy power from another source. Now, none of that showing has been made in the record. Considering the state of the economy, I think that power companies would be lining up to sell power to Georgia Power if it needed the power. Not only that, this process for accessing the CSP through an undue risk prong requires a public process with public hearings and public input. None of this has been shown in the affidavit. There's nothing in the affidavit except bald allegation that Georgia would adopt and distribute the entirety of the compliance supplement pool. And I think clearly the record shows that that would not be the case. Now, with regard to the merits of the issues.
Well, record shows we don't know whether that be the case, is your point.
Well, no, I think with regard to the early reduction credits, I think the record is fairly clear from the comments of the Georgia Environmental Protection Division and Georgia Power that these early reductions that are made are being made through rules that are compliant with SIP, and those don't access the compliance supplement pool. Now, four times through the process of this case, it's been made clear that Northern Georgia should be included within the NOx SIP call. This was in 1998, 2000, 2004 on the remand rule, and again on the petition for reconsideration of remand rule. Yet, what EPA is here before you to tell you is that Northern Georgia now has to be excluded because of a chain of events that dates back to an error that EPA made back in 1998 that has nothing to do with Northern Georgia. It was a mistake that EPA made with regard to sources in Southern Georgia only. Of course, the first time EPA made a rule on Northern Georgia was in the NOx SIP call when it held that Northern Georgia and Southern Georgia needed to be included. The second time was in this court's decision in Michigan. Now, in Michigan, the relevant issue was whether Southern Georgia should have been included on record in that case. There was absolutely no question that Northern Georgia was properly included. In fact, the court stated, quote, petitioners argue that there is record support for proposition that emissions from the northern two-thirds of Georgia contribute to downwind concentrations. And this court agreed. This court said, quote, of course, the fine-grained modeling part of Georgia showed emissions in the aggregate meeting the EPA's threshold contribution criteria. The court went on to say EPA was required to act on that evidence.
Now, up to this point, are we agreed that as to the one-hour standard, the northern part of Georgia was included because EPA found its emissions were significantly contributing to non-attainment in Memphis and Birmingham?
That is correct.
Not with regard to anything in North Carolina.
That's correct.
Non-attainment in North Carolina is 8 hours.
North Carolina, Charlotte, or North Carolina is still not attained under the 8-hour standard.
Right. I just want to be clear.
Okay.
You agree with that?
Yes. And that, as we've indicated in our briefs with regard to standing, ozone is ozone. If we are damaged by the ozone, it doesn't matter whether it's under 1-hour standard or the 8-hour standard. Ozone is ozone.
That all goes to the injury prong, not to redressability.
Yes. And I think there's no issue, really, with regard to the injury prong. I think really all goes to redressability. Now, when EPA promulgated the remand rule, EPA is very clear, and it interpreted the court's order in Michigan correctly. And EPA specifically stated, quote, consistent with this court finding in Michigan, we have revised the NOx emission budget for Georgia to include only the fine grid portion of the state. EPA went on. The court did not call in question the proposition that the fine grid portion of Georgia should be considered as making a significant contribution to downwind non-attainment.
You don't disagree, though. Suppose the remand rule had gone into effect and had been in effect for 3 or 4 years, and Birmingham and Memphis obtained, and EPA put a notice of proposed rulemaking out along lines of the withdrawal rule, that the agency could have done that.
We would agree that the agency do that.
That's because of this policy about one in, never out?
That's correct. EPA clearly...
You agree, don't you, that the agency can change policies?
The agency can change a policy without a rational reason for doing so.
Right.
Has not provided such a reason in the case. And in fact, in this case in particular, when the Georgia Coalition submitted its petition for reconsideration, now this was a petition properly submitted under the Clean Air Act section that is specifically designed to address issues like this, late arriving facts that go to the heart of rulemaking. And on that issue, EPA was very clear in its response, and the Georgia Coalition, that the late arriving fact was the designation of Birmingham. And EPA looked at that fact, and they said Section 307 is, quote, clearly inapplicable. Now, there's only one way to read that verbiage. EPA was making a determination that the redesignation of Birmingham was not relevant to its outcome in the remand rule.
Or it had happened before the fact, and so it wasn't a new fact, if I can put it that way.
Well, if the timing shows this fact arose during the time period that Section 307D7D speaks about, we raised this issue in our opening brief, precisely the way I've discussed it here. There was no response from EPA or any other party. If that wasn't just the fact, Your Honor, I would assume that they've identified that as another issue. We've raised that several times.
Well, they could go under the ADA.
That's right. They stopped the process and said, Birmingham's clearly not relevant to the remand rule. We take that to mean that they determined yet again that Birmingham redesignation is not relevant to this court remand in Michigan. Yet then they turned around and did exactly what they said they were not going to do, and they did it on one ground that said was not relevant. I would, before I get too much into my rebuttal time, I would like to point out EA does have a one and always in policy. It stated it very clearly in its brief on page 27. It said, like most statutes and regulations, the NOTIP call does not call for parties or entities covered by the regulation to be released from its obligation as a myriad of factual circumstances change from day to day. And EPA specifically identified certain myriad of factual circumstances that might change from day to day that would not allow a party to release from the NOx call obligations. That list included rise modeling, new controls implemented at a civic facility, changes in wind direction, and changes in attainment status. That is EPA's once and always in policy, and that's policy that was violated in this case.
What about their argument they're not, as a result of having vacated the rule, just weren't in?
They were in. I thought that statement is simply factually incorrect. They were in.
Well, when we vacated that portion of the rule, they weren't in.
Well,
that's the effect of our vacating it.
I think we have to look at how it came to be vacated. The rule with regard to Northern Georgia was not vacated because there was a problem with Northern Georgia. The court actually said there was a problem with Northern Georgia.
Whatever the rationale was, which the rationale would have allowed them to Northern Georgia back in, at the moment that we vacated, they were out altogether, correct?
As a matter of law, they were out altogether.
So it required a new rulemaking to put them back in.
It doesn't erase the fact that they were in for a short period of time, even before from 1998 to 2000. And in fact, when EPA promulgated the remand rule, EPA was very clear that they were in then. And when faced with this new fact, the redesignation of Birmingham, EPA clearly said, we don't find that fact to be relevant. So even if we say they were not in correctly any time before that, there's no question that EPA believed they were properly in at that point, and EPA believed that it was properly implementing this court's remand in Michigan.
Is it correct that didn't take effect before they were out again?
That what didn't take effect?
Well, the new rule that put them back in.
Phase 2.
Phase 2, to use the language you guys use. Phase 2?
Yes.
That hadn't taken effect by the time that they evaluated the sentence again and concluded that they were out. Is that right?
I believe it. Well, no, because the new rule took effect 30 or 60 days after it was promulgated. The stay was not issued to actually his administrative state to remove them again about a year later. So there was a period of time when there's no doubt.
They were subject to the rule?
They were legally obligated to promulgate us. Georgia did not promulgate us, but they were for that approximately year legally obligated to promulgate a SIP.
Counsel for a respondent.
Good morning, Your Honor. Perry Rosa for the United States. With me is Sonia Robin from EPA. We've allotted 5 minutes of our time to the interveners to discuss the standing issue, which they raised in this.
I have to ask you about the standing issue anyway. So what's the start with the government's overall position? Do you have a position on standing at all?
Well, we would not present a position in the briefs because we thought that was more appropriate for the interveners to raise.
But how about now?
Well, our position
is... I'm not exactly sure why it's more appropriate for the interveners you are defending here. Normally, the government has shown no hesitation about urging lack standing by a petitioner.
Well, in this case, we think it gets down to the Lujan test.
Let's get down to the addressability question.
Okay.
What about that?
We do not think that the state of North Carolina has carried its burden to show redressability here.
And is that because of what you said in the Federal Register notices, that you don't think it would have any effect?
That's the start of it. One of the reasons we did not put forward on standing is because we didn't do modeling on this particular issue. We did not use that factual determination about whether harm would occur or would not occur, whether it were beneficial or detrimental, as a basis for rulemaking in this case, as a basis for determining that George should not be included. That data was presented to us. We analyzed the data as it was presented to us, and it certainly confirmed to us at that time that there would be no injury there, or there would be no redressability. There would be no beneficial action in North Carolina if Georgia was put in the OCCIP call. And, in fact, the opposite may be true.
And so what is your position on what the petitioner would have to show to overcome those findings? I mean, are you suggesting a petitioner would have to do independent modeling?
Under the Lujan standard, which still applies in light of Massachusetts versus EPA, they have a burden. They have the burden of establishing standing, and they have the burden of showing that there's substantial likelihood that a positive ruling from this case will provide a benefit to them. And we do not think that they made that shown here. I think that we can't tell you definitively what will happen if Georgia goes in.
What I'm trying to understand about this case is obviously the parties presented the court with two different views of what the world is like. And in many instances, you know, outside the agency area, we said, well, we take the allegations of the plaintiff as true with regarding affidavits filed to standing. Here we're in a slightly different area, and we have said in these administrative agency cases that there is a fairly heavy burden. But I'm trying to understand, Judge Garland's talking about, you know, the normal standard for viewing agency findings, but I guess that's what North Carolina meant. I didn't understand when it said, well, this would just move to the docket. You took what evidence was presented to you, you made, the agency made a conclusion. It's not as though the agency sort of independently developed evidence and then reached a conclusion. I mean, is that the distinction we're dealing with here?
Well, if they were just notes to the docket and the other statements rely on in the preamble would also just be notes to the docket. They are much more than that. They were analysis of the data information that was presented to us. Some of that was Georgia information. It was compliance with Georgia statutes, not just the Atlanta SIP and other federal statutes and regulations. The information we had was based on what was presented to us by the commenters. We did not do independent modeling or analysis of that information. We took that information as it was presented to us and based our conclusions on.
Do you have any views about the what the interveners have given to us? Because they obviously gone beyond the finding or the notes to the doc that EPA referred to.
We think when you look at it on, it is a difficult situation for court here because it's a lot of intricate technical data to look at. When you boil it all down, you got conjecture as to an injury. And that does not pass the Lujan test. It's got to be something much more than that, and particularly if you look at the redress issue. Is there a substantial likelihood?
Do you have a view of what special solicitude means here?
I think it, for the most part, really doesn't apply here. The Center for Biodiversity case, this court looked at that and said, well, it's pretty limited to the Massachusetts situation here.
Said, really didn't reach that issue. Yeah, so I think it's... We're trying to understand it.
Yeah.
What did you say about this? Did you finish it?
Please, go ahead.
What about our argument that all the intervener's points rest on whether the CSP will be used and that Georgia is not required to adopt the CSP or use it?
I think that's why we're still in the zone of conjecture. That is true to a large extent. That's one of the reasons that EPA cannot stand up here today and say, as a matter of definitive fact, that Georgia would be within all caps, because compliance pool does have to be applied. Certain determinations have to be made as that compliance pool is applied. So cannot tell you in a definitive way that it will be applied exactly.
They don't use it this way. They use it some other way, or they just waste it, or what? What incentive do they have to use it for this as compared to something else? Or under what conditions would they not use it in order to get their number below the budget?
I'm not sure Georgia would make that decision.
But I'm not sure I understand enough about how this works to understand this. So is there, when the petitioner says, well, Georgia's not required to adopt it, not required to use it, what reason would they have not to use it if, for example, if they weren't in the SIP call, would there be a reason for them not to use it?
I'm not trying to understand the question. Maybe there's too many negatives in it.
Yeah, all right. So they argue that the emissions are above the budget, and the only way they get within is by using this SP, right?
That's what the petitioners are.
All right. Now, assuming that that's correct, just for the purposes of the next part of the discussion, is there something about being forced into the SIP call that would require them to use a CSP? Well, if they weren't in the SIP call, is there some other thing that they might use? Is there any reason why they wouldn't do it?
Not that I'm aware of. Not that I'm aware of.
So that makes it considerably less speculative.
It could make it less speculative. That's the first part of it. There are still determinations that EPA needs to make to make the final decision whether full pool is available.
On page 27 of the petition reply brief, they have citations from EPA discussion about Missouri. From 69 Federal Register saying, while the current state rule and the SIP provisions accomplish reductions similar to those of the NOx SIP call short term, without an emissions cap, there's no assurance the required reductions will continue in the long term. Suggesting EPA's view that they want to make sure they're keep them in this call in order to ensure that they actually do what they say they're going to do. Is that relevant here to Georgia?
We don't believe so, because we've moved past the NOx SIP call with regard to Georgia. Georgia is in CARE. CARE is remanded, but it's still applicable. Georgia has to comply with all of those requirements. They're the 8-hour requirements. They are more stringent. We don't think it will have any effect.
But we've got to look at, because they're asking us to rules that they're under the SIP call, we have to look at what their conduct would be like under that. I was under the impression that the CSPs are only available in a regime where they're under the SIP call. Is that not right? Is the CSPs available for some other purpose other than?
I believe they're just under this statute, yes, under the SIP call.
Okay. So in the case where if they weren't under the SIP call, they didn't have a CSP.
They're not using those right. In some other statute, not that I'm aware of.
So North Carolina says, as you heard counsel for North Carolina say this morning, that Ms. Kapp just makes some assertions. There's no statement by the board, action by the board, to show that Georgia, in fact, would do these things. So in terms of whether North Carolina has met its burden to show that, it will be adversely affected and the court can redress it, I'm just wondering where we are. That's why I'm trying to understand, given EPA's findings, exactly what North Carolina has to put before us to show that it has standing. And if there's some question about whether Georgia is going to take certain actions that will enable it to come below a cap, then why hasn't North Carolina met its burden?
Well, I think you can make certain presumptions from the statements of EPA in the record about how it might apply these facts in the future. But again, it wasn't before. It wasn't the basis of the decision. In the end, it used to come to conjecture on both sides. And given the burden that North Carolina must carry on standing, I think the scales balance against the determination of standing there.
I'm just trying to think of, to understand the burden for a petitioner coming into court to basically prove a negative, that in fact Georgia board not approve use of C.
Well, I think, for instance, an example might be compliance pools were afforded to most of the other states in OXIPCO. If they could establish a case that for some reason this case is different, and there would not be a basis in this case to do the same thing the other states were treated, which is a possibility, but we don't think it's likely, or at least we haven't seen evidence for it. That would be something to decide.
Mr. Kearney, when I asked you the hypothetical, or when I rephrase the argument that the emissions were above the budget and the only solution was the CSPs. You said, yeah, that's what they said. You disagree with it, or you agree that emissions themselves above the budget?
The emissions without the CSPs?
Yes.
I
that was sort of not disputed. Is that, am I wrong there?
I think that is disputed by the interveners. Maybe a better one to answer that. There were other factors that North Carolina used to argue their case on the state issue, and I think Georgia responded to all of those. One was the time issue.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Quickly on the 307 issue, to truth, I'm not really sure we fully understand their issue there, but just wrong. They made an assumption about what we concluded, why we didn't treat this under Section 307. The Knox call doesn't apply under Section 307, which is why we went to the Administrative Procedure Act. It's as simple as that. They admit that what they made was assumption. West Virginia versus EPA says, quote, the standard review is the same for the Knox call, which is not subject to Section 706.07D9, but is subject to the Administrative Procedure Act. That's the simple explanation on that.
And what about the question that Judge Gawin had answered earlier about Georgia, in fact, being subject to the Phase 2 rule for a period of time?
Georgia was never in, no more in than Wisconsin was in. Wisconsin was in, if you want to use that definition, you're improperly, mistakenly, in Knox call. Then Wisconsin was in. This court ruled in Michigan versus EPA that just like Georgia and just like Missouri, a portion of it, Wisconsin, we didn't satisfy the criteria.
What if the next level of the question, what happened after the vacating? They said that they were in Phase 2 and that it was in effect before it was changed. Is that right? Wrong?
That is correct. Because the stay was not issued before it became effective, we got the petition from the interveners. We looked at it. We said it has merit, but it kept going on its own. And the stay was not issued for about another year. But again, that doesn't matter. Because if under that logic, Wisconsin would have to be put back in, because once they were in, and nothing that this court says could get them out. Which brings us to the other issue that was discussed most by North Carolina was what this court said in Michigan. This court said it vacated the decision. Vacate means, according to the Smoking and Health case, it means to annul, to cancel, or rescind, to render void, to defeat, to deprive of force, to make of no authority or validity, to set aside, that is dead. And the courts have said that the purpose of that is to come back, and there may be new facts, and there may be things that the agency has to look at, and that's exactly what happened here. And the ironic thing in this case, for instance, is you're familiar with the Section 126 case. I believe Judge Garland, Judge Rogers issued an order on that in March, which sent it back to the agency. The basis of sending it back to the agency on the Knox issue, which was an 8-hour issue there, was because the facts had changed. North Carolina was originally determined to be in attainment, and the petition was denied for that reason. It was brought to EPA's attention that, in fact, North Carolina would likely not be in attainment. EPA did not say, you're out of luck, we made our decision, we're using the stale old facts. EPA said, you're right, we'll take a remand on it, we'll look at the accurate contemporaneous facts. Finally, there simply was no, even if we talk about who was in and not in, there simply was no always in, once in, always in policy. There's no statute that says it, there's no regulation that says it, it simply just doesn't exist. It was cobbled together different statements in a preamble, and it's a policy that doesn't exist. And even if it did exist, EPA can change it. And what better reason to change it is when you take another look at it, you cannot satisfy criteria for putting Georgia in, because simply no downwind non-attainment areas. The same criteria applied to all 50 states, which resulted in 28 states never being included in the Knox SIP call to begin with.
Counsel for intervener.
Good morning. Margaret Campbell for the intervener. I have with me Byron Kirkpatrick, and we're here, of course, to address standing. North Carolina doesn't have standing, but of course it cannot show addressability in this case. That is because the relief that North Carolina seeks reinstatement of the 2004 Knox call will not result in Knox.
If they can't use the CSPs, I mean, from North Carolina's argument, they could try and use the CSP and not succeed. Isn't that a possibility? And then in that event, they wouldn't meet their budget, and be harmed. Georgia would be able to meet its budget, and North Carolina would be harmed.
I'm not sure I understand your question. But
if they can't use the CSPs,
Georgia.
If Georgia can't use CSPs, then they will be over budget. North Carolina will be harmed.
Right.
And if we order them to go within the rules, then that's their injury redressed.
The facts here are that the rule, the 2004 Knox SIP call, specifically provides for the client supplemental allowances of Georgia. And then, of course,
but apparently it's not automatic, right? Is there some chance that they won't get it?
I think that's highly unlikely, given the affidavit that the Attorney General's office has filed from the Georgia EPD. Jack Papp is the head of the Environmental Protection Division in Georgia, and he's the one who will make the recommendation as to whether or not EGUs get the benefit of the compliance supplement pool. And he has testified that he does plan to allocate all of those CSPs to EGUs in Georgia.
But he has to get board approval, North Carolina says.
That's true. Then Georgia final rules do have to go before the State Board of Natural Resources. The Board of Natural Resources has never, in my experience, overridden a proposed or final rule by the Air Protection Branch.
What would the reason for not permitting use of the CSPs was?
I can't think of any reason why they would not permit the use of CSPs in this case, where they say they fully intend to. They said they indicated intention to back in 2004.
The board must, right? I mean, there's some reason for the board. What does the board look at to determine whether to go with the recommendation or not?
Well, the board
will just rubber stamp the recommendation.
The board will look at the way it works in practice, as the Georgia EPD will bring their rule before the full board, and will describe the rule to the board, and then the board is free to ask questions. The board is made up of lay people, and they typically do defer substantially to the Environmental Protection Division.
Thinking more of the substance than the procedure. Sure. What? Whose ox would be gored if it were used in one way rather than another? Is there any rational reason why the board or CAP or anybody else would decide not to use them if they're part of the SIP call?
You know, that's a very good question, because I think they wouldn't. There's no reason why the board would not or would take issue with the allocation of the compliance supplement pool allowances to the EGU in Georgia, because, of course, the Georgia Board of Natural Resources is fully aware of all the reductions that have been made in Georgia to date, because they have approved them. And they know from experience and based on what they've seen is that emissions are continuing to go down in Georgia. And they will understand, and certainly Jack Capp will tell them, that this rule is simply superfluous. It's establishing an emissions cap, an antiquated emissions cap, that's way up here, whereas emissions are well below it based on rules in this state.
They don't allocate it to the EGUs. Could they allocate them to something else?
They absolutely could. They could allocate them to non-EGUs or just other sources subject to the call.
But overall, would that make a difference to being below the budget or not?
They would still be below the budget. Let's say they allocated them to non-EGU sources, then EGUs could simply purchase them from non-EGUs.
But the EGUs need those credits now, right? I mean, they're above the budget now. That's my reading of the record. That without CSPs, they're actually over budget and will be until 2011 or something. Is that right? The reason for this question, if they don't get the credits, they're over budget.
They're over budget, but the...
North Carolina satisfied the redressability prong. Need these credits.
They do need these credits. That's exactly right, which is why we got an affidavit from Jack Capp, which indicates that
he's going to ask for credits. And then your experience is that he generally gets what he asked for. But
that's right.
It seems to me we get some conjecture versus conjecture here.
Well, but the burden here is on North Carolina to prove that they're going to have that reinstating the 2004 rule will redress, at least in part, their asserted injury. And even if they're entitled to special solicitude, they have to at least prove some possibility in mere speculation that, well, yeah, the head of Air Protection Branch might recommend this SP, but the DNR board might reject
Judge
that.
Rogers was asking for, what could they show? What would they be able to show?
And then
North Carolina. How would they satisfy their
brief? North Carolina should have come forward in its initial brief, particularly given the record, rulemaking record, where EPA made these findings that North Carolina, that Georgia was already well below the toxic call levels. They should have come forward in their initial brief with specific facts showing that EPA had made some mistake in their initial determination that Georgia would be below the NOx-IP call. They did not do that.
But they've done it now, right? I mean, they've done it now. So, and but you're saying it's an inadequate showing now. What would be an adequate showing?
I don't know if they can make an adequate showing unless for some reason would not, under any circumstances, be entitled to the compliance supplement pool allowances.
The credits were not, you've used all of them, they weren't enough.
That's exactly right. So we could come up with hypotheticals. Right.
But on the facts, do both sides agree then that the emissions are over budget and everything depends on use of CSPs?
I think that is correct.
So the EPA is wrong in that respect. He thought it was disputed. This is not disputed.
I don't think
it really
so.
Comes down to this.
That's
question.
Right. It comes down to the CSP.
So I could imagine if there were some reason why Georgia wouldn't use the CSPs without enforced into the system, that would be enough. What you're saying is there's no reason why they wouldn't use the CSPs. So what we're going to have to hear from the other side is a reason.
That's correct.
Okay.
All right. Anything further?
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Counsel for petitioner.
So you have a reason.
Absolutely. Okay. There's two issues here. Did you expect me to say no?
No.
There are tissues here. The first is whether the board would adopt the CSP in the first place, and I think Judge Griffith pointed the board is not a rough stamp.
Why?
Why would they reject it?
The person, so to speak, whose ox would be cured would be the environmental concerns. The board is a citizen board that makes rules on a statewide basis. It would hear from the lobby of the environmental groups and would have to make a decision, say, do some EGUs to emit more emission, or we should pay attention to this group. There's certainly a question here as to whether the board would adopt this approach.
I'll just play this out for me. Imagine they're part of the SIP call, and the environmentalists say, don't use these credits. Do something else, I assume, right?
Correct.
And wouldn't the something else also help North Carolina? What would something else be? It would be actually reduced.
Something else would actually reduce emissions.
You certainly want to complain about that.
No.
It's even better.
Yeah.
So if there's two choices, use credits, or actually, which would get them below the levels, and therefore they wouldn't have to do anything, or do something, both of those would eliminate addressability.
And, well, the doing something would be complying with the limits in OCSIP call.
Yeah.
Which would, and that would, and that's the redressability link.
No, I...
Because
as long as they are within the NOx-IP call, either because their emissions are actually below the levels, or because their emissions plus their credits are below the levels, they don't have to do anything, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
So adopting the NOx-IP call without adopting, and if this rules in North Carolina's favor, the choice would be to adopt the NOx-IP call and try to use the credits, or adopt the NOx-IP call without using the credits. And if adopting the NOx-IP call without using credits, that ruling would force them to reduce, and that redressability link. Now, even if the board adopts the compliance supplement pool, there still needs to be a showing that they can access the pool. And the record is clear that reductions that have made to date that are claiming would allow them to access early reduction credits were all due to requirements of the attainment SIP. And that does not allow them to access those credits. They cannot access credits when required by our law under the Clean Air Act to reduce. It's right in EPA's regulations. The other way to access credits is
so
to...
this rule, JJJ and things like that, that's all pursuant to either the Clean Air Act or the Atlanta SIP?
At least one of them is, and I don't know which one offhand, my recollection is that it's fairly clear in the record that the bulk of the rules are pursuant to the Atlanta Attainment SIP or the Clean Air Act, and therefore...
Say that phrase again, because I didn't get it. Pursuant to the Atlanta...
The Atlanta Attainment SIP. The state implementation plan for Atlanta. So even if the board adopts the compliance supplement pool and allows Mr. Kapp to implement that pool, there's still a very substantial question. I think the record shows that those users would not be allowed to access that pool. And EP regulations are clear. If sources want to use those credits under the undue risk test, there has to be a public process. So Mr. Kapp simply can't rubber stamp a request.
What about the response by the Georgia division that Georgia could use those credits for non-EGUs, and then the EGUs could buy them?
Non-EGUs would have to face the same standard. They would, if they're controlled for the attainments for the Clean Air Act, would not be eligible. They can apply under the
indirectly what they can't do.
Correct. So we think it's fairly clear on the record that the chance that there's going to be wholesale access of the entire supplement pool, which is pretty much what's required under the facts that are presented, is a tenuous argument.
Let me ask you, EPA suggested that, or counsel for EPA suggested that EPA has approved use of CSP in most of these SIP calls.
Well, it has approved it normally does approve the use of CSP because there are regulations that allow it. It's the discretion of the state that it wants to. But even when EPA approves, EPA has been very careful to note for the states, it's not just a giveaway. It's not just something to increase the budget for no reason just because sources don't want to meet budget. It is something that there's a rigorous process for determining whether sources can access these credits. In fact, North Carolina made a submission to EPA saying, we'd just like to access these credits, and EPA shot back and said, you can't just say you're going to use them. You've got to make these showings, and it's got to be very particular. And I do not think that North Carolina sources were allowed to access all the credits. With regard to the counsel for EPA's argument on Section 3.7 and why it was not used, it would have been beneficial to this court to hear if that argument was presented sooner. We have raised this in the rulemaking docket. We raised that argument in our brief. This is the first time that I've heard that was in from EPA. So we think they raised that issue far too late. In any event, Northern Georgia was in the NOx call in 1998. There's no question that it met the test for being in the NOx call in 1990. The only reason there was a vacature had to do with Southern Georgia. And in fact, in the remand rule, I think the record is very clear. EP interpreted the court's ruling to indicate that there was good reason for Northern Georgia to be included in the SIP call. And EPA said in that rule, in fact, it was really just doing what the court told it to by including Northern Georgia in the NOx SIP call. Thank you.